Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
So now we know, we say, smilingly, that children from junior infants up to second class, as well as Leaving Cert students, are set to return to the classroom from Monday next. But the landscape is different to what it was when they were last in school because of these new strains of the virus in circulation. The question is, how can we ensure that the classroom is a safe place for all? Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Orla Hegarty, architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy in UCD. Good morning, Orla.
Good morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us on the programme. And we spoke here about ventilation before, and we know we have these new, more transmissible strains of the virus circulating. So how do we make the classroom safe, and what needs to change from how we did things before?
Well, I think the first thing to point out is that the schools took the lead on this from last August, and that teachers and boards of management and parents and children made huge efforts, often sitting in cold classrooms, to suppress the virus and to make sure they were safe. So there's great credit due to them to keeping the levels as low as they did and staying open until Christmas. But I would imagine a lot of schools were starting to find that very difficult in November and December. And now they're going back in the beginning of March. It's still quite cold outside. So one of the difficulties has been that people were probably overventilating. So they knew that this was an issue, and they were keeping the rooms very very well ventilated with breeze blowing through, and they were suffering the discomfort of all of that. What we need to do now, I suppose, is find that right balance where we're not overventilating and people are more comfortable, but that we have people are aware of what are unsafe conditions, how to catch them, and in particular cases, how to know when there's a high risk and how to deal with it.
So you ventilate the classroom very well, or you say you have to manage the numbers in each room?
Well, there's some basic things. Firstly, outdoor air is pretty safe, and the transmission rates outdoor are actually quite low. So the difficulty is that we are sealing buildings, and we're particularly in winter, we're trapping the air inside. And if anybody is emitting virus, it can build up like cigarette smoke. So what we're trying to do is avoid those conditions building up. Now, so the first step on that is for people to wear masks indoors, obviously, because if somebody has the virus and doesn't have symptoms, it stops them spreading it into the air.
Even the
it
little
also
ones,
stops
Orla.
People. Well, the advice internationally is that even small children should, and lots of countries have masks from the age of 3 or 4. And I think if we're serious about mitigation, it should definitely be on the agenda, even for smaller children. Children can obviously get the virus. They don't always show symptoms. But the concerns in the UK about long COVID and symptoms in the long term, I think, need to be taken very seriously. So wearing masks, firstly, it stops people spreading it into the air, but it also stops other people from picking up the virus from the air. So you get a double effect from people wearing masks.
Okay, and there is no recommendation in the return to school plan as of yet, is there, for mask wearing for the younger ones?
Not that I'm aware of. I know previously secondary school children were wearing masks, and I think SNAs were wearing them as well in primary schools.
When it comes to food, eating, drinking, you say all of that should happen outside.
Well, my own view is that is high risk. I mean, that's eating and talking indoors are high risk. When people sit down to eat, they tend to be face to face, and talking is what's putting the virus into the air. So if people are eating and drinking, the best advice would be to wear a mask indoors everywhere that isn't your home, and to do your eating and drinking outdoors or somewhere very well ventilated. So, you know, the other option for schools, of course, is to spread out. They can monitor the air in their classrooms with CO2 monitors to keep them a bit more comfortable. They can spread out, and maybe there's options there for taking over some sports halls or community buildings, or just organising the school day in different ways so that the classrooms are aired regularly, or so that more larger spaces can be used for classes.
I know you had recommended the use of CO2 monitors before. That's not coming in across the board as standard, is it?
Well, I think at the moment, certainly the technical advice is that it's a good way of catching it. So a CO2 monitor isn't measuring the virus in the air, it's measuring the amount of stale air. So carbon dioxide is what people breathe out. And if that builds up in the air, it's a sign that what you're inhaling when you breathe in is what somebody else has just exhaled. People need to be breathing fresh air to avoid catching the virus. So a CO2 monitor is a little device smaller than a mobile phone, and it can track those dangerous air conditions. And, you know, it's not just classrooms, I suppose, that we're worried about. It's corridors, changing rooms, teachers' break rooms, vehicles, very high risk sometimes with people sharing cars, and they don't realise that they need to keep the air moving. So there are very small practical steps. We live in a fairly mild climate. We don't have very harsh conditions outside, either in summer or winter, for most of the year. So Ireland is actually very well placed for dealing with this risk. And there's a great opportunity for us, I think, now to help people understand the risk and then to mitigate it. So whether it's in your home, having a window cracked open in the kitchen and keeping the air moving, or whether it's teachers maybe getting more control in the classroom with CO2 monitors or maybe some filtration fans, and similarly in other buildings. So I suppose the positive message is that all buildings can be made safe once we start to monitor this, and we can manipulate the conditions either by reducing the number of people, introducing more fresh air, or introducing filtration.
And the CO2 monitors have been adopted by some other European countries for the classroom.
They have. Germany are spending a lot of money on investing in improved ventilation in their public buildings and schools. France and Spain are all taking this on. And in fact, in Japan, it's a way that they're managing their restaurants. Japan haven't had shutdowns in the same way. And a lot of Asian countries, because they had experience of SARS, were conscious of this from the beginning. So in a lot of shops and restaurants and even some venues in Japan, they have like a traffic light system where they're monitoring the CO2. And people can see in real time what the reading is. They can see if they're breathing clean air. And if the conditions become dangerous, then people can leave the building. And in fact, they ran an experiment in Germany during the summer in a venue with a concert where people wore masks and they had very good air quality in the venue, and that didn't get to the stage of dangerous conditions. So aside from the taking off masks for eating, we can actually make a lot of buildings very safe and measurably safe, where people will be able to see in real time, either on their app or maybe on something on the wall, that they are in a place that's safe.
And just bring it back to basics. I know at the beginning of all of this, we were all concerned about touching surfaces and getting the virus that way. But we are much more likely, we know now, to pick it up through what we breathe in.
It's a respiratory virus, so I mean it gets into your lungs, so it is predominantly caught by people inhaling it. But I mean, nothing we say should reduce, you know, the efforts for hygiene. People have been very vigilant about making sure that their hands are clean and that they're not spreading germs, and that has helped with lots of other diseases as well. So I think the message that hygiene is still very, very important, but people need to maybe think more broadly about the situations that they're in, and that even goes for people maybe who work in a shop, who have a break room or have a storage room at the back, maybe where there isn't a window. All of these small risks may be things that people don't see as being a problem at the moment, and that they can deal with them. Because in broad terms, I think a lot of our buildings are pretty good. I did some spot checks in supermarkets, and most of them had pretty good air quality, and similarly in some pharmacies. And it was just a spot check with a CO2 monitor, but it is an indication that we have mostly naturally ventilated buildings in this country, where people have openable windows and they're not relying on air conditioning. We have mostly a fairly mild climate. And we also, you know, people can open windows in cars and buses, and we have space to spread out in a lot of buildings. All of these things add up.
On your spot checks, Orla, I know you're involved in a new group, aren't you, advising NPHET? Are you doing your spot checks
as part
of that work?
No, this was just for my own interest, to get a sense of just, you know, whether we do have dangerous conditions, because I think it's something that retail and hospitality sector now can actually advance. This is a science they can engage with, and they can start demonstrably making their buildings much safer and lower risk. And it's not reliant on any other other, you know, factors, whether their vaccine is rolled out quickly or slowly. The weather's improving, people can meet outdoors maybe more freely, and the businesses that want to be reopened can start to monitor their air quality and be able to reassure their customers and their staff that the conditions are safe.
Now, we have listeners getting in touch, Orla, as you're chatting. In the school where I teach, most of the windows can't be opened. What can we do?
Well, obviously there's an issue there for the board of management. You know, everybody needs fresh air, even aside from worrying about COVID. When CO2 builds up in rooms, children get sleepy and their concentration drops. And there's plenty of research that shows that children don't perform as well in badly ventilated schools. So it's an issue that has to be dealt with anyway. Where it's difficult to get adequate ventilation, portable filtration cans, fans can be used. And they're fairly cheap, maybe relatively speaking, a few hundred euro for a classroom, or you can have two units in a classroom where they're drawing the air through a good quality filter all day long and putting clean air back into the room, and that can take pollen and other pollutants out as well.
So a portable filtration unit might be the answer if you have windows that can't be opened.
It'll certainly make a help.
And yeah. Pat says that in his school or her school, we can't spread out. There is no extra space. That's when ventilation is really important.
That's a really difficult one, you know, and I think, you know, as a community, we all want schools to be back and we want children to be safe. I mean, there may be opportunities for people to be a bit more imaginative about use of other buildings in the community. In Denmark, they're organising the school day that children spend more time in parks. They're using churches and museums more imaginatively. So, you know, I think if we are serious about keeping them open, it's important. During Spanish flu in New York, they took a policy decision that they wouldn't close the schools, and New York is a lot colder than Ireland in the winter, but they kept the schools open and they had children very well wrapped up in hats and coats sitting outdoors in desks for several winters in order to keep to keep things moving and keep education open. So it is achievable if we can get the balance right.
Now, outside of schools and beyond schools, lots of workplaces are still open. We know even in level 5, indeed there are some who would say there are more open than should be. But what should people be doing, and what are you hearing from the evidence that's coming back when it comes to monitoring where the outbreaks are happening? Are workplaces properly ventilated, or is there also a problem there?
It's clear that the same types of workplaces are the hotspots that they were last spring. By targeting the high-risk places, this can make an enormous difference. In fact, the transmission rates generally in the community are probably low, except for the dangerous places. So the places that particularly are of concern are places like the meat plants, where the air is recirculated. And in a meat plant in Germany, somebody was infected at 8 metres. So distancing isn't going to solve that problem. The filtration and the ventilation needs to be improved. And then the other risk areas are buildings where people don't wear masks. So nursing homes, hospitals, institutional housing, and places where people are in overcrowded housing is another particular risk, because they're sharing bedrooms. And again, this goes back to all the lessons learned from Spanish flu and TB, when, you know, people were constantly told to keep a bedroom window slightly open at night just to let the ventilation be trickling through and not let those disease conditions build up. So a lot of this knowledge was there before. In TB, classrooms were built with higher ceilings for better ventilation. You remember the TB hospitals had people on balconies, and even some of the flats that were built in Dublin in the 1940s had balconies that were big enough for a TB patient to sleep on. Mm-hmm. So this is all parts of architecture that were well known before, I think, that we just need to maybe reconnect with, to see that, you know, we can make our indoor environment safer. And every time you do that, you break a chain of transmission.
Orla, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Orla Hegarty, architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture. Now, coming up, we'll be bringing you the best of music documentaries and biopics available for you to watch.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.